Body, if I should have revved you up, if nothing else has. I have to say the Rolling Stones are not here today, and also we don't have the DJ, Goldie Rock, sadly, so you've just got us. That was obviously our Carnaby switch-on night, and for those who are dialing in, we've just watched a rather racy video of the Carnaby Christmas light switch-on, which we worked in conjunction with the Rolling Stones in celebration of their 50 years. Last year, those of you who are here will remember we were talking about Dr. Samuel Johnson, who was hanging around the West End over 250 years ago, meeting his friends in, well, what is now Chinatown and now the New Loon Moon supermarket. But in those days was a great coffee house. 50 years ago, Mick and the boys were actually rehearsing around Carnaby Street in a pub nearby. They're actually down in the old Delmar Theatre in Seven Dials. And they've done pretty well for themselves over the last 50 years. Probably the world's number one supergroup. We're unlikely to see their light again. But, you know, the West End is a home for creativity. It's a home for culture. And actually, probably around the West End now is the next Rolling Stones, and the Rolling Stones after that. So that's the world we live in. It's creative and exciting. I'm not quite sure what Dr. Johnson would think about it if he was back today. I'm not sure he'd want to be doing a critical review of 50 Shades of Grey, but that's life today, really. We have to get on with it. Anyway, so thank you all very much for coming today. We've got, as I said, we've got some dial-in listeners to the presentation this morning. We will have a Q&A session at the end, so if you can save your questions till then. And I would just ask you to please switch off your mobile phones, because it upsets those of us here on the stage. So you have a presentation there in front of you, and we can not spend too long going through some of the less exciting things, but really focus on what's going on in the villages. Turning really to page four to begin with, what we're going to talk about today is an incredibly prosperous area. We always say it's busy, we always say it's lively, but London has had the most incredible year. It's probably this time last year we were a little bit cautious about how this was all going to pan out, but actually as we sit here today, I think it's hard to imagine it could have been better. Great Olympics, great Paralympics, people really got behind it all. And I think that played out incredibly well around the world. And now we're seeing the benefits of that in even more demand and even busier streets. And I suppose you could say the icing on the cake for our Olympic performance is actually we've got more medals than our friends in France and Australia. So we've got something to thank ourselves for. In terms of Shaftesbury's results, well, our profits are up some 7% to 31.2 million. On the back of that, we're increasing our dividends by 6.7% up to 12p. Income is driven by demand, and our reversion is now up to £19 million, up some £4.3 million over the year. Against a portfolio valuation of just under £1.83 billion, we've produced NAV growth of some 7.6%, so our NAV, adjusted NAV, now stands at £4.98 per share. We've been very busy during the year. Acquisitions at £44 million are probably very much in line with the average over the last 5 years, very close to that. We've had some busier years, we've had some quieter years. I think what you do have to remember in now, in looking at Shaftesbury's acquisitions, is that we're incredibly geographically focused. We look at a few very restricted areas of our patches of the West End, not even the whole West End. In the sort of assets we buy, we're absolutely focused. It's about shops and restaurants, as you know, so I don't think you'll find us buying great big office buildings to convert into high-end residential to sell off. That's somebody else's world, that's not us. And of course, in a prosperous area, people are very reluctant to sell, so our supply is naturally very limited. So £44 million a year is absolutely fine. We're looking at lots of other things, but it's always unpredictable as to what's going to come along. Simon and Tom will give you a sort of rundown on what's going on in the villages, so I think we can move swiftly on. Our strategy, I think, is pretty well covered on page five. Page six shows you what we own, where the villages are, and some sense of the size of the individual villages there in terms of their footprint. Seven is a summary of really how we go about running our business, and I think really there the key words are this is all about creating prosperity for our tenants. If our tenants don't prosper, then we won't in the long term. So it's about this approach to management which creates these clusters of ownership, lively places where you actually want to come to and spend money and spend time. because we always remember people don't have to come here. They'll come to our villages, they'll come to the West End. It's a good experience. Moving on to page 8 and the portfolio valuation. Capital growth this year for us has been around 5.5%. That compares with the IPD, which has actually drifted down by just over slightly over 3% this year. We have seen some yield shift in the portfolio, 14 basis points for the year across the wholly owned portfolio and 7 basis points in long margin. A lot of that has come through in the second half of the year, and you know, I think our valuers have seen much more transactional evidence generally across the West End. They can see there is good demand for good quality assets in the West End, and I think that demand is particularly so where you have clusters of ownership. It's not just about buying one building, and it's not surprising that Carnaby, which is our largest single cluster of ownership, has seen the biggest yield shift. So that's where the demand particularly sits in our areas. But at the end of the day, I would say I don't believe we would have had this yield shift if we didn't have rental growth and ERV growth. If our income was flatlining or sliding backwards, I do not think you would have seen the sort of yield shift that we've seen this year. Now, yields come and go. There's not much we can do about that. But in the long term, it has to be rental growth driven. Demand is very strong. We've had like-for-like ERV growth of 6%. Commercial ERV available to let is, you know, about where we'd expect it to be, nothing unusual. Reversion, as I said before, stands at some £19 million. And it's quite interesting, if you turn on to page 10, you'll see we've produced a summary of where our reversion has been over the last 5 years, and also where that reversion sits. So the little table there that shows of that reversion, 25% is effectively already contracted. We've got rent-free periods running. Some 35% sits in schemes which we now have underway or about to start. And then 40% comes through the natural cycle of reviews, lettings, reviews, renewals, all the sort of day-to-day management things. So, you know, we're confident that this reversion does come through with Shaftesbury in over generally a five-year cycle. At the same time, we should be raising ERVs to actually replace the reversion we're crystallising. So that really is the essence of the Shaftesbury model. On page 10, you see the yield shift across the villages. So the wholly owned portfolio now sits at an equivalent yield of 4.79%. You see the villages in an individual, in a particular year, do different things. I think if you would take this, we always say if you take this over a 3 to 5 year cycle, the villages generally perform in a similar manner. So this is really a sort of snapshot of a 12-month period, which in our terms is probably quite short. Soho is the one that stands out there with a bit of yield shift in the wrong direction. Here, this is in the early stage of this project. We're buying more. We've got a number of schemes on. We've actually got quite a lot of empty properties here in Soho at the moment where we're working on. We're absolutely confident that they will let quickly as soon as the schemes are done. But I think in an area like this where we have less of a track record to demonstrate to our valuers, it's not surprising that they're slightly more cautious until we actually deliver. And that's what we have to do with all of the reversion. We have to deliver it. Moving on to page 12, you'll see a summary of our vacant space. It doesn't really move very much, but obviously this year we're just starting a couple of big schemes in Carnaby, which Simon's going to talk about. But even so, in total, we've only got 3%, just over 3% of our ERV under refurbishment, which does include our schemes in Carnaby. Of our general available to let stuff, again, that's around 3.2%. We did have 5 larger shops available just by coincidence at the end of September, and we do like a bit of liquidity in the portfolio. It's important we do have a movement in our tenant base. And those 5 large shops have got an ERV at a total of £1 million. 3 of them are under offer, 1 virtually under offer now, and 1 we're talking to a number of people. So the demand is there, the demand is good. These things are turning over all the time. This is our meet and drink, day-to-day stuff. They're not the same properties that were there 6 months ago or 12 months ago. We do not have that sort of problem in this portfolio. We're just talking on this slide about wholly owned vacant space. Just worth mentioning, we've got over 424 flats, which produce 11% of our income. When we had a little count up the other day, we had 5 of those empty. This is like running a hotel operation, really. People come and go, but it's pretty much a fully let hotel. So, again, we don't talk about the flats because it's a sort of non-issue for us, really. Page 13, just benchmarking against the IPD, obviously we've outperformed both in terms of capital values and total return this year. You know, we do take a very broad index here, but it's some indication of the strength of performance in our market. I'm going to turn to Chris now, who's going to talk about the results in a little more detail, and then we'll get on to talking about the villages.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, everyone. Well, it's been another good year for us, with net property income up 6.6% and profits before tax up 6.8%. If I home in on the property income, our rents were up 5.6 million, of which 0.9 million came from acquisitions we made in the year. 1.3 million came from Longmartin, as it's now fully let, or virtually fully let. And we had 2.5% like-for-like increase in rents we've invoiced. And you put that together with last year's exceptional 7.5%, it gives an average of 5% over the 2 years. And actually, our long-term average is sort of 4.8% anyway, so this, it kind of stacks up with that. But, you know, we don't look at 1 year in isolation. It's a long-term business, and you have to kind of look out for the long-term. Our operating costs were up a little bit as a percentage of rents from last year, 11.7% last year, 12.3% this year. Actually, it was largely driven by a number of external decorations and repairs type works we did. You know, in the old days, we used to be allowed to create provisions for cyclical repairs and maintenance, and the accountants amongst us stopped us doing that, so you get lumpiness every now and then. Didn't think I'd ever hark back to the old days. Next year, well, we can have some void in the portfolio, as Simon will talk about in Carnaby, where we have two big schemes and two large offices which we're refurbing, which will temper our income a little bit next year, but will bring long-term benefits. I'll leave those for Simon to talk about. Our admin costs were $10 million, up 0.4 on last year. There was a much smaller, there was a smaller bonus provision, but we had some other costs. You know, the business is growing in complexity, and the activity we're doing is more and more. We have a small team. We've hired some new people, so we've got to, you know, higher staff costs. And actually, we have a much wider team of professionals around us, and we rely on them. And so, you know, our professional fees have gone up. Just as a sort of aside, our lease runs out in our building in 2014, so we will move. We put aside a elapsed provision because we're coming to the end of being in there for how many years?
18, well, it'll be 20 years by the time, 20 years, so, time we moved on.
Now, so look, our earnings per share are up 1.7%, which is a much lower percentage than our profits. And actually, that's entirely driven by the number of shares in issue after we did our placing last year. And as Brian said, we've recommended a final dividend of 6.05p, which takes you to 12 for the year, 6.7% up and fully covered. Brian has discussed the valuation. If you'd like to turn over the page, the valuation has been a main driver in our NAV growth of 7.6% up to £4.98. And you can see the bridge here. And as you'd expect, dividends go out the door after underlying profits are made. So that's kind of how the REIT works. So really the growth here is all down to the valuation. So if we can turn over, have a quick look at the finances. I mean, we remain on very sound footings with a loan-to-value of 30.5%. Undrawn facilities at the end of the year, just over £139 million, which is, you know, great firepower for us to have. Debt increased in the year by £61 million, and that was actually all about capex and acquisitions. Our weighted average cost of debt is 5.43%. That's all in, including our interest margin and the non-utilisation fees on the £139 million that we haven't drawn yet. The current margin we're paying is 88 basis points on our bank debt. That would rise to 104 basis points if we drew down everything. And you need to bear in mind that, you know, our banking deals were struck before the banking crisis. And so they're very nice, cheap, favourable deals that we have. The marginal cost of borrowing at the moment is 1.7%. And actually, if we drew down everything, our weighted average cost of debt would fall to 4.26%. But as you know, we have £360 million of interest swaps. And, I didn't think I'd ever be moaning about yields being so low, but it's obviously, as a result of that, our deficit on those swaps has grown by £28 million to £133 million, But we keep this under review. And at the moment, we have no intention of closing these swaps out. It feels like we'd be paying out money at the top of the market. And quite frankly, we feel we could do better spending the money filling in the jigsaws in the villages. If you turn over, you can see the maturity profile of our debt. This is page 17. We have $375 million of facilities that expire in 2016. We have some very nice facilities running out to 2020 and 2021, which are pre-banking crisis margins, and we really don't want to disturb those. So, you know, we are having some discussions with our banks, and you mentioned this in the press release, with our banks and potential new lenders. I mean, really at the moment, because it just feels like the right sort of time to have these discussions. I don't really want to be with my back against the wall with a banker frothing at the mouth in 2015. So this is kind of a time to have a discussion. Is there something we can do that's mutually beneficial, push out our maturities, maybe refinance? So it's all very early days, but it's just a sort of a heads up that we are having those discussions, and they are, yeah, I mean, they're good discussions. You know, the banks, they see us as a very, very sound credit. And it's not surprising. We have freeholds in one of the global cities with a great track record of managing these things. So they see us as a fantastic credit, and the banks really want to work with us still. So with that, I'll pass over to Simon, who can teach you about the villages.
Good morning, everybody. As Brian mentioned, we have excellent demand across all sectors, and this has particularly escalated since the Olympic Games. Since the half year, we have let 48 Carnaby Street to Dr. Martins and have concluded a number of important rent reviews and lease renewals also in Carnaby Street. Indeed, JD Sports, who trade as size and certainly one of our most successful stores in Carnaby, approached us well in advance of their lease expiry to renew their lease at market levels, and they're now going to carry out a major refit and a refit of the only Converse store in the UK. The established headline rent in Carnaby is now £450 a square foot Zone A, compared to £430 in March of this year. I also mentioned we had a few vacant shops in the estate at the moment. We have two vacant shops at 10 Carnaby Street and 46 Carnaby Street. I'm very pleased to say that we put one of those under offer earlier this week, and I'm very hopeful that by the time we finish this presentation, the other one will also be under offer. Both of these are two international retailers, one for a first ever store outside their country and the other for a flagship store. Whilst Carnaby Street is where we have the majority of our largest stores, all the surrounding streets are also incredibly important for the whole vibe of the Carnaby area, and we're seeing some really exciting and interesting concepts and independents coming into these areas. In fact, actually 60% of our retailers remain independents, which gives the whole area that point of difference. And at Appendix 10, there's just a list of a few of the people who have come in the last 6 months. Fashion, particularly youth fashion, is a constantly changing thing. We actually had a meeting with an American retailer last week who was looking to take space in our area, and he believes that actually fashion brands have to reinvent themselves every 3 years. And this is one of the real reasons that we keep our leases relatively short, 5 years being sort of the normal lease length. And we have all our leases contracted outside the security tenant provisions of the Landlord and Tenants Act. So that enables us to move on if a brand sort of loses its attraction. Dr. Martin's is a prime example of this. 5 years ago, we probably never thought of putting them into Carnaby Street. Just checking what Chris is wearing. But they, again, have reinvigorated the brand. They've done a number of collaborations, which we're now told is... The buzzword is collabs rather than collaboration, with people like Agnes Dane, Alice Delal, and indeed Liberty. We mustn't forget the restaurant side of Carnaby, which is now an ever-increasing and important part of what the area is. We have some incredibly exciting and interesting concepts coming to see us constantly. We take as much care over the selection of restaurants as we do on our retail, sort of eschewing the major brands and going for the sort of smaller independent operators, and that probably involves an awful lot of tasting, which is not a bad job to do. The works to Kingly Street have had a significant benefit. I think you've all probably seen the increase in restaurants and the quality of restaurants down there, particularly with all the alfresco dining. And this is also extended now through into Ganton Street. We're currently in discussion with Westminster City Council about extending the pedestrianisation of Kingly Street up to the top of Great Marlborough Street and extending the pedestrianised hours as well, which again will have a significant benefit. We naturally review all of our assets on a regular basis, and to this extent that we've had a complete review of what Kingly Court offers to Carnaby. You will be aware that there are a number of restaurants already in Kingly Court and the surrounding area, and we've decided that Kingly Court should be repositioned as a food and leisure destination. To this extent, we've obtained a planning consent for 3,500 square feet of restaurant space on ground and first floors, and that scheme is well underway with a view to it being available to hand over early in the new year. We've appointed David Coffer to deal with the whole of Kingly Court. They're our sort of main restaurant agent, and we're already in discussion with a number of complementary users, so it will be a delicatessen, wine shop, cheese shop, flower cellar, which will provide a sort of all-day offer to the people, both the people in the immediate area and also to the tourist spend. Offices, we've probably got our largest amount of offices in Carnaby Street, Carnaby area. We are beginning to attract an ever-widening customer base for our offices. We've got a number of people coming from the other side of Regent Street. Our office rentals tend to be probably two-thirds of the rental values for similar space over in Mayfair. We still maintain our sort of media, constructive industries base, but we're also getting a lot of financial businesses taking space with us. Unfortunately, there's quite a trend for surveyors to take space with us as well, although that does help the bars and restaurants. We are due to commence refurbishment schemes on 28,000 square feet of office accommodation in the new year. These are in floor plates of between 1,000 and 4,500 square feet. We've got these buildings back basically because the existing office tenants have taken larger space elsewhere. But we're very confident that we will be able to let these back very quickly. Promotion for all of our villages in Carnaby is massively important to what we do. We've got to keep ahead of the game. And as you came in, you saw the rather exciting Christmas decorations in Carnaby. We were approached by the Stones probably about 15 months ago with a view to doing a collab with us. As Brian mentioned, you know, there's no more iconic band than the Rolling Stones. And the fact that they have 11 million followers or 11 million friends on Facebook was quite a determining factor. We have two major schemes in Carnaby currently on the go. And if you look at page 20, you will see that we've got the two schemes on the north side and the south side of Cruz Place. The development on the north side, which is Lazenby House, is well underway, where we're creating three larger retail units, two of them with frontages both to Cruz Place and to Little Marlborough Street. Those schemes are due for completion in April of this year, and we have just commenced our active marketing campaign. Rental levels for these units we've set at just in excess of £300 square foot Zone A, which is very competitive compared to Carnaby Street, but we believe that once we have done this scheme and the scheme opposite, which I'll come on to, we will be able to see good rental growth in these locations. You'll see that Liberty have opened up a major entrance on the corner of Kingly Street and Little Marlborough Street, and shaded light brown on that plan is further entrances they're looking to open up in the course of next year. So we'll be able to create a new shopping street in Little Marlborough Street. And again, we're in discussion with Westminster about further pedestrianising Little Marlborough Street and street improvements. Also, Liberty, which we probably mentioned before, have now taken the 15,000 square feet of offices above for their own occupation on a 30-year lease. On the south side of Hubert's Place, we have now got planning consent for the scheme which fronts both Cubitt's Place and Kingly Street. We are relocating the 6,500 square foot restaurant from Cubitt's Place into Kingly Street, creating 7,500 square foot of retail on Cubitt's Place. And in addition, we've got another 7,000 square feet of offices and 12 residential apartments. That scheme will commence early in 2013, with the retail and restaurant accommodation being available autumn 2014 and the remaining accommodation by the end of that year.
Thank you, Simon. Tom, Covent Garden.
Thank you, and good morning. We're moving on to pages 24 and 25 of the presentation. Covent Garden is our most extensive investment district. It extends to Seven Dials, Opera Quarter, Coliseum and St Martin's Courtyard. We're at 50% share of St Martin's Courtyard. This year, the uplift in value on the wholly owned estate has been driven mainly by the restaurants, where we've seen some pretty good rental growth and also a shift in the restaurant yields. We've also seen good performance in the residential element of our holdings in Covent Garden. And in fact, in Covent Garden, we have the highest proportion of our flats, some 50% of our flats now in Covent Garden. Acquisitions, we'd have liked to have seen more, only $2.5 million. But as you've heard from Brian, the market is incredibly tight and we are extremely fussy. So we've actually said no to more opportunities than we've actually tried to pursue. But we have bought more since the year end. Not big lot sizes, but very typical Shaftesbury stock, all with sort of medium-term asset management angles, just the stuff we like to get our hands on. As you've heard from Simon, it's a similar story on the demand side. Very good tenant demand across all uses. At Seven Dials, we have a slightly older demographic than Carnaby, still very much fashion-focused, but not quite as sort of rock and roll. And there we are looking at doing a bit of a sort of repositioning with some of the retail. And just to give you some examples, I think some of you will remember that at the half year, we moved very quickly to wrestle the Firetrack unit out of the hands of Mike Ashley when that business went into administration. But we've since relet that unit to Le Coq Sportif, French sports brand, as their sort of UK flagship. They're fitting out now. We've also, on Earlham Street, we are replacing the former band store and we're putting in Peter Worth, which is a menswear retailer, actually now part of the sort of JD group. Our highest concentration of restaurants in Covent Garden is in the Coliseum and Opera areas. There they make up overall it's some 30% across Covent Garden. I just wish we had more restaurants to let. It's really, really difficult to get possession. We continue to see leases changing hands for substantial premiums. And yes, that does filter through to the to good growth on the rent. But really, our objective, I think, is still to try and get some more back so that we can create more rental growth. Simon has talked to you about a couple of the sort of higher profile for us and Carnaby schemes. But I do think it is important just to remind you that Shaftesbury is all about lots of little schemes as well, or relatively small schemes, and we continue with a very steady pipeline of such projects. Just to give you an example, in Seven Dials, we are redeveloping the Marquis of Granby pub, which sits, it's a sort of gateway property, sits at the junction of Shaftesbury Avenue and Earlham Street. We secured vacant possession of the property in September, and we're extending the pub into the lower floors of an adjoining office building and converting the upper floors to apartments. We haven't even started formally marketing the restaurant element here, but we have had a number of really quite interesting approaches, and the quality of the operator, and these are well-funded, experienced people, is really, really most encouraging. And on a scheme like this, which, I mean, I think the CapEx will be about $1.3 million, I will be very surprised if we don't see a return of something in excess of 20%. This is probably at the sort of higher end of their normal sort of return on these schemes, but it just shows you that where we can make money from not necessarily spending the money, but it's the opportunity to change the uses, introduce more valuable uses to sort of redundant properties. We are working with Camden on a new traffic management scheme. This is something which we've been discussing for some while in Seven Dials. This is a scheme, it's quite a simple scheme, just designed to reduce vehicles travelling through Earlham Street by closing off part of the street. and reversing traffic. This is going to be trialled in the spring, and I'm really quite pleased. I think that that will have quite a material benefit to the sort of pedestrian experience. It makes the whole area much more pedestrian friendly. In our St Martin's Courtyard joint venture, which we completed or substantially completed some 18 months ago, the retail and restaurant tenants have all bedded in very nicely. I think it's quite possible that we may make one or two changes to the retail mix within the courtyard itself. Also, since the year end, we have let 13,000 square feet of offices. The bulk of that space went to Andrew Lloyd Webber's really useful group, who are the sort of office tenant that we really like. These are, you know, long-term local occupiers. They've taken a 10-year lease, and that sort of tenant is ideal for us. We're also now advancing one or two small refurbishment schemes in some of the peripheral buildings.
Just
before we move on to Chinatown, I've just got to plug the Seven Dials and St Martin's Courtyard shopping night tonight. I think you will see there was a flyer on your chair when you came in. We've got over 120 retailers participating this evening. Thankfully, the weather has sort of improved. I don't mind cold as long as it doesn't rain. And it's not too late to register, so I hope we might see some of you there later this evening.
Should we now go on to Chinatown?
Yep. Over the pages 26 and 27. Chinatown, it's not quite a quarter of our portfolio, but it's the most concentrated and centrally located restaurant and leisure district in the West End. This Chinatown story, it's one you're very familiar with. The prosperity of this area is really underpinned by the large theatres and the cinemas close by and the huge numbers of tourists and visitors that the area attracts, and also the late hours of trading. The estate remains virtually fully let, continues to perform very steadily. It requires modest levels of capital expenditure, and this year it's gone up in value by just over 5%. Restaurants, which unsurprisingly are the predominant use, and they've been the main driver, with the restaurant yields on the very prime restaurants in Chinatown now at 4.5%. In common with our other villages, an important part of our strategy is to refine and enhance the visitor experience by introducing new and better quality trading formats. In December, we will see the opening of a bar called Opium. This will be a new bar on Gerrard Street, which promises dim sum and cocktails. So I think it's going to be quite a sumptuous affair, so do please go and check it out and let me know what you think. We are especially keen to introduce new businesses and concepts from China and East Asia to add to the already very diverse mix of cuisine. And in fact, one of my colleagues and I have just returned recently from a trip to Hong Kong and China, where we were meeting with well-established restaurant groups who have aspirations to expand to London. One of the things which was quite interesting and came out of our discussions is that all these operators were very well aware of the anticipated relaxation in the visa restrictions for Chinese nationals visiting the UK. And as many of you will know, at the moment, the UK only attracts some 10% of Chinese visitors to Europe. There's a complete mismatch, and it is because of this rather complicated process that visitors have to go through to come to the UK. We rather hope that, I think it's expected now, that our government will make some changes which will sort of give us parity with our neighbours in Europe, and I think that will be a boost for London and the West End, and particularly for Chinatown. We continue to work very closely with Westminster Council to upgrade the public realm, and we will be part-funding a further pedestrianisation scheme at the southern end of Wardour Street, which is the most important gateway to Chinatown. And work on this is due to start after Chinese New Year, which is on the 10th of February. for those of you that want to come and visit Chinatown, then it's always a good party. Neighbouring developments and investment by others are adding to Chinatown's prosperity. You've heard about the refurbishment of Leicester Square, which was completed in advance of the Olympics. Now that the dust has settled, that has really gone through quite a transformation. Leicester Square, I think, now hosts a film premiere almost every week, which is quite staggering. And these sorts of events bring huge numbers of people to this location.
Thank you, Tom. Simon, would you like to cover Soho, and then we'll just finish off quickly with Charlotte Street?
Again, as Brian mentioned, Soho is a long-term project for us. Interestingly, if you look at the rental levels of Berwick Street at the moment, it is exactly the same as Carnaby Street was in 1997 when we bought Carnaby. We don't think that Berwick Street will ever... we don't want it to be a new Carnaby Street, but it's just an interesting comparison. We have acquired properties to the value of £29.5 million in the period, comprising 11 shops, 4 restaurants, and 3,500 square feet of offices. Our original investment in the area was very much centred on Berwick Street, but we've now widened the net slightly, and our major investment in the year was actually in Brewer Street, just to the south of Berwick Street. Brewer Street is a really important east-west route linking Regent Street through to Soho, and of course has been significantly enhanced by the Crown's Quadrant Scheme, and indeed they're due to carry out a further street, a scheme upon Brewer Street. Again, as Tom mentioned, we're constantly improving our existing holdings, and we've got a number of projects on the go at the moment in Berwick Street and surrounding streets, including the creation of 2 new restaurant units. In the pack that you have, you will see a plan which gives you an indication of all the surrounding developments in the area, which, again, we very much welcome because it's all part and parcel of bringing this area up. One of the properties that, of course, we've referred to quite a lot in the past is Kent House, which was a property that was being marketed by Western City Council. It has recently been reported that this building has been acquired by PMB Holdings, or at least a 6-year leasehold interest has been acquired by PMB, with the basics that they will extend that to a 125-year lease subject to planning consent. Whilst it's not openly available as yet what they're going to do with the building, we believe that it's likely to have some form of hotel and leisure element. The good thing for us is actually something is happening here. Somebody's actually going to be spending money, which will improve the area generally, and hopefully there'll be significant investment in the Berwick Street market as well. Trenchard House is another scheme which is just around the corner in Broadwick Street. That has now commenced, and it's a development by a consortium headed by Barratt's, predominantly a residential development, but there's also a large commercial element fronting onto Broadwick Street. Again, this is something which has been vacant for many, many years and will have a significant benefit to the area. Soho Estates are looking to submit a planning application for Walker's Court, which links the bottom end of Berwick Street through to Brewer Street, and indeed the northwest link from Shaftesbury Avenue all the way up to Oxford Street is seen as a priority link by Westminster City Council, and they're looking to do significant road improvements in that area. We've got lots of inquiries out in relation to acquiring new properties in the area. You can't force people to sell, but you can rest assured that we're very active in that respect. Just turning quickly to Charlotte Street, again in the pack there's a plan showing activity in the area. The major schemes here being Fitzroy Place, which is your Middlesex Hospital site, which is predominantly a residential scheme, the post office site in Newman Street, which will be developed in due course as a mixed-use scheme, and of course, very importantly, Crossrail, which we touched on previously. Crossrail will benefit both our Charlotte Street holdings and Soho, especially with the major entrance to Tottenham Court Road station halfway down Oxford Street. We acquired 2 properties during the course of the year, a total value of £8.9 million, including 2 restaurants. And we know, and Julia will back this up, that virtually every restaurant operator that comes into Sears is very interested in taking a restaurant in the Charlotte Street area. We will never really be able to actually acquire the same sort of concentration of properties in Charlotte Street as we have done in our other villages, but it still remains very firmly on our radar, and we will look to be acquiring further.
Thank you, Simon. Well, we're drawing to a conclusion now, page 32 of the presentation. As I said at the outset, this has been a truly memorable year for London, and now is the time to reap the benefits. And we've always said this is a long-term gain for London, and I think it's probably been proved right in the short term. Training was a little bit quiet and people were a bit distracted. We always said that would happen. Now you're seeing a huge push to promote London. London and Partners are launching a global campaign next year to bring more tourists here, and the simple slogan is, you've seen London on your TVs, now come and see the real thing. You've got dear old Boris out in India at the moment banging the drum for business in London. We're in the world spotlight, and actually Tom's visit was not to Southeast Asia, to China and Hong Kong. We're not unconnected with that. Where actually we need to remind people far and wide that, you know, London isn't the UK and London is not Europe, where there are all sorts of structural problems. This is a truly global destination. We have to go and look for our tenants from a global market. Simon mentioned Crossrail. There is substantial investment going on in the West End in terms of transport infrastructure. Crossrail is described as a game changer, and it really will be. It's a shame we've got to wait another 5 years for it, but it's a huge construction project. But it's going to be a fantastic benefit to the West End and the ability to bring more people in and out, and actually taking a lot of pressure off the existing transport network. Crossrail is obviously, as you've all read, is becoming a real catalyst for investment and development. For us, the East End of Oxford Street is really important. All of our areas are certainly within a 10-minute walk of a Crossrail station. Some are probably less than five. So this is really important for us. And meanwhile, a local working population is also very important for the economy of our villages. And we're pleased to see so many new office schemes around us. We love the schemes that Durban and Great Portland and all the rest produce, because actually those people that occupy those offices shop in our shops, meet in our villages. And actually we don't have the sort of buildings that where we could accommodate those big floor plate office schemes. But the West End does need them to attract global businesses, which is what it's doing. We say we're prospering, we've got a good current reversion, and so we feel very comfortable with the sort of demand we have now. We don't think this is going to go away, and actually it will fuel more ERV growth. But as we keep saying, we are a long-term business, and we have to do things for the long term. Some of our schemes next year will temper our growth. And I think one thing everybody should remember with Shaftesbury is our growth doesn't come through evenly. We can have a dull year, but over a 3 to 5 year period, this company and this portfolio really performs well, and that's our time horizon. In that context as well, yes, we do have good financial arrangements at the moment, good facilities, but we will do the right long-term thing for this business. There is long-term finance available, rates are pretty good at the moment, so even if there is a little bit of short-term pain in taking more expensive arrangements now, it will be the right long-term thing for this business. Appendix 11 sets out the risks in this business, and I would encourage you all to read that so you know what we deal with every day. One of those issues we deal with are challenges. So the cycle of fashion and interests were growing up of other areas in and around London. We always remind ourselves that people don't have to come here, and they will come here if it's a good experience, and that's what we try and provide, as along with others in the West End. We've got a pretty experienced, enthusiastic management team. A number of our staff are here today, and many of them you all know. There's still only 20 of us in the office at Shaftesbury. I think we'll go up to 21 next year when somebody comes back from maternity leave. So it's a very small team, but we have some great advisors around us. We don't do all of this ourselves, but we are all of us absolutely committed to this strategy. We're enthusiastic about it. And we believe we can respond to the changes and challenges ahead. It's looking good for us, I have to say. Now we just have to deliver some of this reversion. Anyway, we've run on a bit here, so I'm quickly going to ask you now for any questions on the floor. There are people coming around with microphones. If you could just say who you are, name and company, that would be useful. And then once we finish with questions in the room, we'll move on to any questions from those who are listening in.
Ben. Good morning, Ben Richard from Green Street. Could you give us a little more insight onto acquisitions? It's obviously a challenging market out there, but you have, you know, potentially quite a competitive advantage, very low cost of debt, cash on the balance sheet, access to equity markets. Why is it you're not able to sort of beat other people in the acquisitions market?
Well, I can honestly say of all the things we wanted to buy this year, we haven't missed anything. So we are very choosy in what we want to buy. It's got to be certain sorts of assets. I'll say converting office buildings to residential is not for Shaftesbury. The assets we look for are assets with growth potential. There has to be a focus on shops and restaurants. So the pyramid, the bulk of our value is in the lower floors of the buildings we look at. But at the end of the day, the only way you make people sell is by offering them ridiculous amounts of money, and we're not going to do that. If you gave us a target of £100 million this year, we'd spend it easily by going and buying all the wrong things and probably paying the wrong prices. And well, we're too disciplined for that. We know that's not in the best long-term interest of this business. But you just have to be patient. Things do come through. But actually, we're not reliant on acquisitions to grow this business. If you look at the growth inherent in the portfolio we've got, there's loads more we have to do with this. It's not a static shopping centre. You do it and leave it there for 20 years. This is a constantly dynamic, moving portfolio. And yes, we do want to buy more. They're sort of fodder for tomorrow. But they come when they come. And then they have a compound benefit when they turn up.
We know every owner of every building that we'd like to buy. So, you know, and we keep very close watch on everything that's going on. It is very unlikely we're going to miss anything. But as Brian says, you know, there's a certain level you go to, but there's no point in significantly overpaying.
Chris will tell us about the three Ds that we rely on.
Well, I mean, it's all about distress. So it's sort of death, divorce and debt. And all of those things might unlock assets, which we can't buy otherwise, because people just don't want to sell at the moment. They've got their money in freeholds in the West End. You know, actually, it's a pretty safe place to have your money where in the economic sort of environment we're all in. So those things unlock it. You know, it makes me sound a bit like the Grim Reaper, really. But
it's never done us any harm.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you think when you look out in the next few years, your long-term business, are we in a cyclical point where it's difficult to acquire? Are these 3Ds going to make it? You know, do you see a future where there's going to be more acquisitions?
It's always been difficult. This is the world we lived in. And actually, you say £44 million this year, you may think is disappointing. It's exactly our average for the last 5 years. We haven't looked back beyond that. We have one or two lumpier transactions, but it's sort of steady. It's completely unpredictable. Completely.
So would you not consider a slightly wider geography then?
No.
But why not? Why wouldn't you be able to apply what you do?
We choose the areas we choose for a particular reason. We're not in this business to buy income from assets. We're in areas where we think don't have the long-term characteristics as these areas do. So you're not going to see us going to Camden or Shoreditch. Some local guy will do it for you. We're very well and deal with those risks in those areas. We stick to the secure centre of London. It's never easy. It hasn't been easy for the last 26 years, but we've sort of managed to do it. And I've got no reason to believe we won't do it for the next 26 years either. One piece at a time, like doing a jigsaw puzzle.
We believe very strongly that we're in the best part of the best city in the world for what we do.
Okay, that's fine. So, and then the margins are going to go up if and when you, not if, but when you refinance. What do you expect margins to be at the moment?
Well, I mean, that one of our bankers might even be in the room, so I mean, this is a commercial discussion.
All right, thank you.
Sorry.
Thanks. It's Howard Lesser from UBS. On the like-for-like ERV growth, you mentioned you got 6% for the whole year. Can you give us an idea of the split between the first half and the second half?
It's probably one-third in the first half, two-thirds in the second half. It's very transaction-driven. I mean, we've got a pretty much fully let portfolio. Well, Chinatown is a classic example where actually we struggle to get vacant space relet to give rental evidence to the valuers. So it's a bit fluky with us in a short-term period, like 12 months, would you say?
As Brian says, when the growth comes through, it's all determined by the time of your lettings and rent reviews and so forth. So you don't need to read too much into which half of the year it comes in. You can never quite predict.
And on the 4% capital growth in the first half, how much of that do you think is from yield compression, how much from sort of underlying cash flow improvement?
The growth in the second half?
Yeah, the 4% capital growth.
Well, there was an element of yield shift, which was quite valuable to us.
Yeah. I mean, it's not such a straightforward answer because the growth in ERVs affects the yields as well, so the two are slightly interdependent, but we did get some yield shift.
Okay, and then finally on the income, you mentioned obviously you got some voids coming in economy, which could put pressure on the P&L. We could refinance, which could have negative on the cost of debt. Your dividend's growing faster than your earnings. So would you consider paying an uncovered dividend to sort of smooth dividend growth progression?
Yeah, I think, looking at the income, the property income, we quite deliberately have got space empty next year because we're doing schemes. And this isn't, you know, a shopping centre in, I don't know, Blackburn or something where we have empty space and we don't know where they're going to be to relet it. We're building new space which is going to give increased income, and we feel very confident about that. So with that in mind, I personally would feel okay to be uncovered for a year on the basis that you know you've got deals coming and you know you've got a growth in income. So, I mean, yeah, we're still expecting. We've got a, you know, 19 million reversion in the portfolio, so that if we do refinance some of our debt, and it's not all of our debt, and if it does cost us some more, we've still got a lot of growth in the income line to come. So I don't think that's such a major problem. It's really just sort of just putting the ideas out there, laying the markers down. But yeah, I mean, to be uncovered for 1 year, as long as we feel comfortable that we're not going to be uncovered on a long-term basis, because that's just entirely unsustainable.
Thank you. I'm sorry, one more on Long Martin. Any progress with putting that in the REIT regime, or are your sort of JV partner still quite reluctant to do that?
I think they are reluctant. It's a bit disappointing for us, but you know, I assume we do raise the subject with them from time to time. Takes their partners a little while to come round. Michael.
Michael Burtis, Spirit of Santo. On acquisitions, it's obviously been mostly making those acquisitions in Soho and Charlotte Street. I was just wondering, given that those villages are relatively small in the context of the overall portfolio, what scope you see for growth there, particularly in Soho, given that you've slightly expanded beyond the initial remit of Berwick Street?
You mean growth in assets or growth in
growth
value?
In assets.
Like I say, we're constantly in touch with everybody in the surrounding area. Opportunities come up, and the property in Brewer Street, I guess if you just told us last year that we would be able to acquire that, we probably we wouldn't have thought we'd been able to. So there's a lot of opportunities, but we can't promise. And but I mean, it is an area that we think we will be able to invest in over the long term.
Just to be clear, with the acquisition in Brewer Street, we haven't expanded our sort of target area out of frustration about not being able to buy in Berwick Street. We've always had aspirations to hold properties there. It's just the opportunity has only just come up. We've also, you'll have noted, there was a little note in the report to say that we've moved some properties which were within the Chinatown estate over into the Soho holdings. That's just an accident of history. We had some properties around the Denman Street, around the Ham Yard redevelopment, which we've owned for a long, long time, and really always should have been in Soho, but we just kept them back because we didn't want to sort of tip anybody off.
Just on the offices side, you talked about sort of increasing breadth of demand for your offices, and I guess sort of a long-term part of the strategy has been conversion of offices into other uses. I was just wondering if you see the rate of office to other use conversion slowing in the future.
For us, probably not. I think it's we like to keep the larger, more efficient, more modern offices because actually there's good demand for them, but the smaller, older buildings, you know, little walk-up offices, you know, that market isn't quite the same. It may be very good today, but we know it's very cyclical, and there have been times when we, you know, you just have small tenants and they don't last in any sort of difficult time. A lot of our smaller offices we used to think have a great theoretical income, but actually never saw it by the time you got people in and out and had to refurbish. It's just not worth keeping those. But the bigger floor plate ones, we wouldn't dream of changing any of our bigger offices.
I mean, a lot of our conversions are actually putting buildings back into their existing use or their original uses.
Yeah. And of course, we do keep all of our residential. We always remind people we don't sell. It's like passing the ownership of part of these really valuable assets. It's taken us years to buy. You don't suddenly sell a bit off. It actually would restrict us in the long term. We like to have a buzzy local residential population, and it's generally younger people who shop in the shops and eat in the restaurants. That's what it's all about, this village concept.
Bernd Stelly, Merrill Lynch. It's a small part of your portfolio, and it's a very small deal, but can you explain to me the logic of buying individual residential apartments? You bought 7 residential units.
No, they're all upper floors on the main focus is the lower floors. They just happen to come with 7 apartments. We never buy individual apartments, so you can assume they had shops or restaurants downstairs.
That's what I assume, but
yeah.
I can't imagine. The deals on the economics on that restaurant space must be so good to compensate for what is going to be very limited growth on the residential side, I presume.
Well, now growth in residential is limited. Our rent's been going up to the 10% per annum. Capital values are good. But actually buy them as a package. You can't split them up. It's not feasible in these buildings. And we like to keep them under our complete control.
And that particular property, you just happen to own the building next door, and you might be able to put a floor across both of them.
We can add to the residential, even though you'd be amazed, but the opportunities in these funny, quirky old buildings, as Tom said, of taking out staircases, adding floors, putting space on the back, more residential. They're all part of a jigsaw which unlocks other things around them, so you can't sort of quite look at them in isolation.
Okay.
But we're not going to suddenly start buying blocks of flats. That's not our world. The interest is always in what's in the lower floors. Any other questions in the room? No? For those dialing in, we now take any questions for the audience that's not in the room.
Telephone participants, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads now.
Five.
Again.
Five. Well, I think that's it then. Well, thank you very much for coming along today. As ever, Shaftesbury tours are always available for you and your clients. We've got some packs at the back as you leave of our usual maps and brochures and things. Do come shopping in Seven Dials this evening because it's going to be a fun evening. And we look forward to seeing you all around the portfolio. Thank you.
That concludes our call. Thank you for attending. Participants, you may disconnect your lines.